final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. From North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can
I'm alive. God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's old Shaziz here. Hope you all doing well out there. You're listening to Shaziz Mad Science on ShazizRadio.com and WakeRadio.com and People to People Radio and TNSR Radio at 1800 online. Man, there's so many of them, I just can't even remember all of them. Anyway, I want to start off this show by playing a little bit of clip. The first thing I want to say before I go into all that is that people in this world seem to find themselves in a one-track bubble from all the education that they've been taught throughout their entire lives. And so, you know, with that said, me being the kind of the radical of the bunch there, the bad apple, maybe, so to speak, is that I dare to think outside the box, and I dare to question the norm, I dare to question the laws of physics. I just want to be a free thinker and to be able to discern from the evidence presented to me what the actual fact of everything is out there. When it comes to mainstream science, you can't necessarily trust mainstream science any longer after they've been proven to either falsify information for grant purposes or whatever, or they just can't bend from the standard point of view that maybe there are different things, maybe our reality is slightly different than what we actually believe it to be. So anyway, with that said, and without ranting just yet, I would like to go ahead and play just a bit of this. This is from a YouTuber called Crow777, and it's entitled, How Far Away is the Moon? So I'm going to play this. It's probably about maybe less than 5 minutes long, but I just want you to just kind of listen in and hear what the guy is talking about.
Welcome to the Crow Discovery Project. You know, I find so many things that I accepted as true my whole life that once I actually take the time to look at them for myself and critically think, I find problems. So, let's take a look at the moon.
I'm doing it.
Good morning.
Mute your mic for a second, Justin, would you?
Okay, so a bunch of people commented on the Menelaus crater comments that I made and showing the United States covering the moon and that thought experiment. So here's a different thought experiment. Menelaus crater is 15 miles wide on the moon, and actually one source told us it was 16. So I'm in Google Earth. I made this circle. Let's measure it. It is basically, oops, here we go, 16 miles wide. So one source told us that Menelaus was 16 miles wide. I think I called it 15. But anyhow, this is equivalent to Menelaus crater right here. So we're going to do a little test. It's not the be-all and end-all scientific test, but it does give us, in fact, a point of reference to do a thought experiment about how far the moon is from us. Down in this corner is your eye altitude, or the altitude that your eye will be at. Let's see how high we can go before we can't see this red dot.
The background
is identical in size to Menelaus crater on
there
the moon.
You can you mute your mic for a second?
Detect with your naked eye if you have good vision or glasses on. Here we go. Up we go, up we go, up we go, up we go. And I can barely detect that dot. I'll call that 40,000 feet, which means the moon is six times further away than we are right now, and we can just barely detect that there is a bright red dot there. So I ask you, how far away is the moon from Earth? Okay, and so anyone who would like to argue that Google's sweet interface of our reality isn't anywhere close to accurate, you could simply take all the numbers we used and divide by 1,000 to roughly, very roughly, ballpark this experiment. Let's just divide everything by 1,000. If you divide everything by 1,000, what you're going to end up with is an object that is 79 miles, heck, I'm generous, I'll call it 80 miles in diameter at 240 miles. Could you see with your naked eye an object 80 feet in diameter at 240 miles? Could it be done? And actually, I'm sure there's people that are a lot better at math than I'll ever be. You could do a cool clip and work on some of the things I've shown here. The point is that when you really critically begin to look at things, you find problems. And I know what I said about the moon is very hard to accept. When I first began to realize what was going on, I didn't know what to think. I thought, man, I gotta quit doing this. But the fact is that if you keep at it and you critically think and you do not accept what you've been handed, you will come to understand that there is a whole other reality that is not anything, does not even resemble the reality you've been handed. And it should not be a surprise. I mean, look at what the news does to us all the time. Look at all the false flag attacks. Look at the endless lies. Okay, in closing, I put up an article about spring on the Examiner, and I wrote it in the way I did on purpose.
Okay, everybody, we're back. I just wanted you to hear a bit of that. I also posted a link to the actual video itself on Crow777's channel. I posted it in the Shaziz Radio chat room, and I posted it over in the Awake Radio chat room. Essentially, we've been told a lot of things from school to just word of mouth from friend to friend. Everybody has their own beliefs and everything under the sun. And there's a lot of individuals out there, and it seems like the crowd is growing a whole lot faster than anybody could have imagined, of people who are willing to use critical thinking to think outside the box for their own selves and not go along just to get along, not just go along with the flow. So in the science community, I've pretty much alienated quite a few people because they get upset because I don't stick to the school books. I don't stick to what was told because I want to get down to the truth of the matter, the truth of whatever's going on in the world. You know, how the world works. It's no reason to basically work on your car if you're not interested in how the car even functions. You're not going to be any good at being a mechanic if you're not going to be willing to think outside the box. See, some of the best innovations have come around because necessity is the mother of invention. You know, you're out in the midst of nowheresville, and your alternator belt splits in half, and now you have nothing to run your alternator or your water pump while you're driving down the road, so you can't make it home unless you figure out some sort of resolution. Now, one of the craziest resolutions that I ever heard in my entire life that I know for a fact to be plausible, and because I know the source, was, yeah, somebody typed it in the chat room, pantyhose, fan belts. The best redneck science ever. You guys can unmute your mic now if you like. Anyway, my uncle did that, and he was able to get back home. And at one point in time, I literally took a squirt bottle. And I don't recommend anybody try this because it's not necessarily the safest thing in the world. But when my fuel pump went out of my car, I ran a rubber hose out the window and had a squirt bottle hanging out the window full of gas. And I would just every so often squirt a little bit down the carburetor and keep it running just enough to actually make it home. Now, once again, I don't recommend that anybody try that for safety purposes. If that thing backfires, then you pretty much got a wick up to wherever that gasoline is at. But I made it home.
You're bucking up that direction there where you got those people on YouTube that have turned super soakers into flamethrowers.
Yeah.
And then caught their hands on fire and God only knows what all else because that plastic's flammable.
Yeah, well, you got to be a little bit more creative than to just stick it directly in there with an open carburetor. I actually had it underneath the air breather and inside the carburetor, but it worked. It got me home. Was it the brightest thing to do? No, but you know, it actually saved me the money on a tow bill because I'm out in the middle of nowhere, and I was able to get the thing home. But either way, it's just a small example of, you know, necessity being the mother of invention. Now, with this video that I posted out there about the moon only being how far away the moon actually is, and the plausible reasoning behind why they actually asked the question, you know, whether the moon is 240,000 miles away or 10 feet away doesn't matter to here nor there to me. What matters is the fact that somebody looked at it with an observation and questioned what they were told. That's the key. You know, everybody that just takes everything as it's told and basically repeats it as gospel to the next guy, so on down the line, you know, they're just basically adding to the mess. What kind of purpose would a government of the world or people of the world or, you know, corporations or companies of the world, what kind of purpose would they have for not wanting you to know certain things, you know, such as alternative energy sources or whatever, you know? What reasoning would they have? Can you guys think of any reasoning outside of what we've already known from the conspiratorial sense?
Well, that's kind of enough, isn't it, Shazif?
Yeah.
I was
mean, what more do you need other than an uneducated, uninterested population that's so wrapped up in some fake soap opera that they can live their lives vicariously through other people's issues?
Yeah, I saw this movie one time that was really interesting. I don't know if y'all ever had a chance to see the movie Interstellar, but at the end of that movie was something that was pretty fascinating. They had a spaceship. Inside a spaceship was basically a copy of what Earth would look like. But if you could visualize inside this sphere, that the ground went all the way around the inside of this sphere, and there was like just a planet inside this sphere. And so while watching this movie and seeing that, it just kind of dawned on me, what if the planet Earth had been destroyed thousands of years ago, and where we are today, we're actually in a sphere like that going through space? You know, some folks are talking about the Earth being convex, and some say concave, and some say the Earth is the center of the universe, and others say that, we're revolving around. Regardless of that, all those questions have some sort of plausible thing, something worthwhile looking into, you know. Even if it goes off into the science fiction, you know, a lot of times science fiction turns around to be science fact. It's all fascinating to me. My whole deal about the whole mad science thing is I can't stand people saying, "Oh, this is not possible. It defies this law of physics or that law of physics." If that's the case, all the things we've seen in Star Trek, The Next Generation, and all the futuristic space movies are not plausible, because cars don't float. How could they, you know? You could put helium in a balloon and it'll float. So there's something going on there. What do you guys think? Nobody? Don't jump to the mic at once. I wouldn't want you to chip a tooth.
Well, you know, don't everybody jump to the mic at once and end up banging heads against each other too.
There you go.
Also, I was just giving you guys a word in edgeways, but on your point about artificial life systems, Shaziz, in 1970, a science fiction author by the name of Larry Niven wrote a series of books called Ringworld. And effectively what this is, if anybody's seen Elysium, where you've got this circular spaceship just outside the orbit of the Earth, where everything's green and pleasant. Well, can you imagine something that was millions of miles across that actually surrounded a star, an entire ring? And that's the basic concept of Ringworld. It was built by a bunch of advanced architects. Populations were put on it from all over the solar system, Earth, Mars, Venus, you know, and then over millions of years.
It's a step towards level one civilization. Wow. Basically, a civilization that consumes so much energy that they're using the entire output of a star.
Yeah, Star Trek had a episode about that, where they found this huge, what looked like to be a planet, but it ended up being a real big giant shell around a star, and there were people living inside there.
Well, it's similar to the concept of Isaac Asimov's Rama as well, a massive great big spaceship, miles long and miles wide, with an entire habitat environment inside it, with its own fake sun. I mean, there's a lot of science fiction writers that have been through all of that. And look at the 90s with Star Trek. I mean, they're wandering around with iPads. It took 10 years to get them on the shelf.
Yeah. Well, what kind of reasoning would you think that these individuals would have for, like, suppressing, you know, different ideas that are outside of the mainstream, you know? What if we were the center of the universe? What would that say for science and religion, you know? And, you know, I had somebody ask me a question just yesterday. Why it is that I always talk about how I believe in God, but I also are good at science. And science doesn't even have all the answers, you know. It's just a prime example. What holds a proton, a neutron, and an electron together, you know? They say they don't know. It's magic. They ain't figured it out yet, you know. They're looking for the, or maybe even possibly found, I don't know, the Higgs boson, you know, the God particle, so to speak, you know. Why search for something that wouldn't exist? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, they believe they found it, but their certainty is still not accurate. What a lot of people don't get, though, is that when they say they're fairly certain, they're talking, they're not talking like, oh, there's, you know, a 10% or 20% or 30% chance they're right because of the data they have. They're feeling that they're within the 90% realm.
So,
and they're looking for it because they think that that's what gives everything mass, which in turn gives everything a gravitational pull, which would keep protons, electrons, and neutrons tied together.
Yeah,
or as the joke goes, the Bose-Higgson particle shows up to church, and the priest says, "What? We don't have any Bose-Higgsons in here. Get out!" And he's like, "What? You can't have mass without me."
And so, you know, this whole world is just it's full of wonders as far as I'm concerned. And when you listen to science, and we know how far our optics can see as far as our telescopes and our space telescopes and radio telescopes and all this and that, but yet to this very day, the only thing that they can say is that we got this point of light out in the galaxy, and we can tell by the wobble of this light, this flickering of this light, that there's a planet around this this deal. And then we can tell by different light spectrums of what materials are on this planet, you know, whether it's made of gas and such.
Or if there's water. That's the big one they're searching for, is water, because it gives the opportunity for life as we know it.
Yeah, but
here's the thing. It's not a guarantee. It's just, that's another possibility. It also means that it's a potential escape hatch.
Yeah, but
find that Earth is not habitable at one point or another, and we are forced to find a way to get to another star. We've got to find the most plausible one because we don't have the technology to just go out there dithering around hunting for whatever it is.
But here's the thing, Thomas. If they can get by with those standards, why is it that they hold the alternative energy community to higher standards, such as we have to have a physical device?
Because they're looking for practical application.
Well, see,
everything that you just described when it comes to the astronomy field is still theoretical because there's no pinch for something to be done right now. However, when you get up in the morning and you've got to go 30 miles to get to work, your car has to work right now. What happens if it doesn't work? What happens if anything goes wrong with your car? There's a potential you lose your job. You know? So if you come up with an energy device that you want people to rely on to get back and forth to work, to heat their house during the winter, to cool their house during the summer, especially with kids with asthma and whatnot, it has to work.
Well,
so all of the technology is going through this. It's just they have deeper pockets to make sure that it works than we do. And it's harder for us as garage scientists to solve these problems and then, you know, provide something that we're sure will work.
So I'm guessing, yeah, my next question to you, Thomas, is going to be this. All right, if I run my lab like that and I have a theory and I say that I believe that all energy travels in wavelengths, and that, you know, magnetism is gravity, and that's my theory. My theory ain't plausible as their theory is plausible because they're the mainstream, highly educated, book-learned science guys.
Let me tell you how I feel about that, okay? Neither one of you matter. Because I don't have to worry about it waking me up in the morning or getting me to work. It's perfectly fine for both of you to theorize in that direction. I am totally okay with either entity doing those two things.
Well, that's good. That makes you one of the wonderful guys as far as I'm concerned. But the fact is, go out there on YouTube and talk science to people, and
you will run into a lot of zealots. Like you out there and talk, go out there and talk about religion to atheists. Or you go out there and talk about atheism to Christians or Muslims, you're going to find people that delight, like Ren from Ren and Stimpy. Do you remember that cartoon?
Yeah, that was messed up.
Remember the one with the don't whiz on the electric fence? He's like, "I'm so angry. I've never been this angry before. You know what? I like being angry." They delight in being angry. They delight in, you know, waking their emotions up. It makes them feel alive.
Well,
so you just have to take that with a grain of salt when somebody starts getting stupid with you and just move on.
And I do. At first it was kind of, you know, it was hard to shed off all that. And every once in a while I do kind of let trolls get on my nerves. But either way, my point of this whole deal is this, you know. The mainstream science out there is, in my mind, hindering progression in what humans could actually accomplish. And
actually, that's just it, though. They're not hindering anything because they're not affecting you at all. You know what's affecting you?
Well, yeah, they are affecting me.
Fear of failure. Okay, media is what provides that. It's not the science community. It's the media. The media is responsible for, let's say, they find, you know, that this chemical they've created kills 20% of the cancer cells in a culture that they have injected it into without killing the other cells, or only killing like 2% of the healthy cells. The media reports that as science cures cancer. They're like, well, we didn't say that. We said, you know, we see a perceivable cure possibly in the future because this looks like something that, you know, might work. Science, you know, creates time travel.
Okay.
And of course, this is where the explicative comes out. You know, the F you, you know, why do you keep misquoting me? And then the next response is, science rapes, reporter, you know. Everything gets twisted by these people.
Well, why aren't the mainstream scientists coming out and voicing, you know, the whole deal that the mainstream, because they could voice it on alternative media just like we can. But where I say that science affects me.
They are afraid of losing their credentials, so they tread very carefully on the edge of what they're willing to say and what they're not willing to say. If you get those people behind closed doors where they're sure they're not going to be quoted for, there's no telling what kind of conversations you would have with people like Michio Kaku or Neil Tyson deGrasse, you know?
Yeah, well, I'd love to have a conversation with all of them. But my whole deal, where science affects me, and maybe it's not actually the scientists themselves, is the education system that quotes science as 100% gospel. Like, you know, we know that a theory is just a theory. I believe what I believe, you believe what you believe, and so on. It goes vice versa with atheism and religion and science and all that kind of stuff. All right? And so theory isn't something that's proven. Fact is something that you can physically, tangibly hold in your hand and prove, or, you know, it's a witness or whatever. You know what I mean?
But, right. Well, listen, when you were talking about the astronomy, okay, and I'm using spectrography to tell what chemicals are out there and stuff like that, you're talking about a field of theoretical science where they have tested it here locally repeatedly and got validated factual results. So they're basing it on that. But because they've done it here as opposed to long distance, that's where they have to tack on theoretical. Because they've never proven that long range. They don't know but for what maybe something is happening to the light from there to here, changing its frequency, so that they're actually thinking they're seeing one chemical when actually they're seeing another chemical because the frequency has changed from what it was when it bounced off of that chemical on its way here between then and the time it gets here.
That's right.
So they're allowing for that potential failure due to the lack of actual physical knowledge in that arena, but they're using the fact that they've got repeated positive results here in order to base the theory on.
Well, that's
so
brilliant.
They're not just, you know, going harebrained, you know, helter-skelter off of that.
That's brilliant, but, you know, once again, you know, society as we see right now, you know, okay, it's all pretty much a money-based system regardless of what, is that, you know, you don't put the iPod or Apple computer out there with the camera on it so that you can sell the one that doesn't have the camera. When you sell out of the one that doesn't have a camera, you could say, hey, look here, you could buy this one. It doesn't have a camera on there. So, you know, you end up getting spending another $300 to $600 or whatever those things cost to buy a new one.
That's just it. You didn't spend $300 to $600 more for it. What you did is you worked for two separate items that person took the time to make.
in that company.
Well, I'm not opposed to people making money off of the deal. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying here is that, you know, in the alternative energy community, you have people out there, brilliant individuals out there doing amazing work. And they're continuously under attack from knuckleheads who continuously quote the mainstream science views of everything. You can't get around this, you can't get around that. And instead, if these folks out here, the scientists out there, the mainstream scientists, if we had a problem such as the so-called global warming deal, and we needed a solution for it, there has to be a solution to the deal if everybody was to come together and use their minds critically and even listen to the ideas that are outside of the box. You see what I'm saying?
Well, sure is. I've spoken to a lot of professors in various different fields of education. And if you get them drunk and have a chat with them, pretty much all of them will agree to the standard principle that, you know, this stuff becomes fact because a bunch of career academics have all sat around and agreed with each other. And that's kind of the basis of our modern science.
And that's why I'm like a rebel of the whole deals, because, you know, if science fiction is ever to become science fact, you're going to have to try something that doesn't seem
ever to become. Dude, we've got lasers.
Well, yeah,
science fiction has been becoming science fact. You don't have to worry about that, okay? That's the truth.
I can
the
dig
truth it. Is a lion. You do not have to protect it. It will take care of itself.
I guess
it's not a little weak, you know, willied horn-rimmed glass nerd that might get beat up by the school bully, you know, theorist.
Well, to get to the future, would you rather take a ricochet that you're pulling somebody else on, or would you rather drive a Lamborghini to get there?
Well, the question is we have to use
whatever I can put together myself.
That's going to be the ricochet with your finances.
Guys, if we're looking at media muses, you know, if we've got lasers, do we have sharks with lasers yet?
Well, Star Trek, man, they got the doggone little handheld gizmos, man. Well, of course, we got laser pointers, but they won't, like, vaporize you or nothing.
No, but I've got one laying on my desk right now. I can burn and cut paper and wood, which is, you know, way, way further than I would even have imagined I might have had 30 years ago.
CO2 laser? Have you tried any of them, Thomas? Have you tried any of the CO2 lasers? Because I've been looking at that stuff.
No, I haven't had a chance to get my hands on a gas-powered laser. This is just a near-ultraviolet handheld LED laser. And it's only 50 milliwatts. I mean, it's ridiculously weak, yet it has this incredible punch. So,
well, I guess it doesn't matter. I guess what my whole issue is, I'm getting impatient because, you know, when I was a kid, they was like, the year 2000 is going to be amazing. We're going to be flying around in cars and stuff, and we're still sitting there arguing about fossil fuels.
Hey, you don't need to blame the scientists for that. You need to blame Paul Mohler for that. That's his fault. He told us he was going to have a flying car in 200,000 homes by the year 2000.
Well, who shut him down? Was it the FAA or what is it?
No, nobody shut him down. He couldn't work out some of the mechanics he needed to do. He's not a scientist, not a scientist. He's not a businessman. He's just a scientist that doesn't know how to navigate the business world. So his funding didn't last well enough for him to complete everything he needed to do.
So why didn't he consult you on Skype?
Because I wasn't around back then, and there was no Skype. Actually, I'm sure he's too hotty-totty to ever talk to somebody like me anyway.
All right, well, now we do have Skype, so now we can bring all these minds together. I'm like that one dude that always says, get her done. My wife hates that. She just despises listening to that get her done stuff.
Let's say we start putting together, compiling a list of technology that we can cobble together on the, you know, like basically on the cheap, to for lack of a better term, to do things that normally you would not be able to do. Okay, do you have the means to heat something up to over 1,000 degrees?
Yeah,
and keep it from getting any oxygen and hold it under pressure.
No.
Okay. Well, can you go down to your local Ace Hardware store and buy some steel, some thick steel water or gas pipe?
I'm sure I could do that. There's also a metal by the foot company where I could go get some big old steel pipe.
Okay. So, but the stuff that you're looking at Ace already has this really heavy duty threading on it, and they have all these wonderful fixtures that are made specifically for going on it. Okay. Now, you could go and pick up a piece of 2-inch or 1-inch or 1 3/4-inch or even 3/4-inch pipe, a pipe nipple. That means it can be anything from just the threads, so you can put two caps together with just a tiny bit of space in between them, all the way to like an 8 or 12 foot pipe with a cap on either end of that, and you can get a heat gun for stripping paint down at Home Depot and put 1300 degrees on part of that, the interior of that pipe.
Cool.
Okay. Now, do you want to go the next step?
What's it take?
It'll cost you about another $20.
Well, so okay. Far, our budget's in the realm.
Right. Head down to the auto parts store and look for a specific type of paint called Flame Proof. Okay? It's made by VHT.
Cool.
You put two coats of that, you get the primer, and you get whatever color you want. You can use any color, doesn't matter. It's all capable of withstanding up to 2,000 degrees when it's properly cured. Okay? You get your parts, you get something that you can put them all into, make sure that they fit inside whatever it is it's going into, or at least the part that's going to be in contact with anything you're putting inside of it that might be caustic. Okay, if you're working with acids and stuff like that, the last thing you want to do is heat up to ultra-high temperatures an acid while it's up against a metal surface, because it will end up destroying itself and turning into a metal salt.
Wow.
Okay, so then, you know, your experiment is fudged. You might end up with something interesting if you make a mistake and do this, because a lot of mistakes actually end up turning out to be great scientific discoveries. But for control, flame-proof paint, you put it inside of an oven, heat it for 250 degrees, give it 30 minutes, turn it off, let it cool for at least 30 minutes, heat it back up to 400 degrees, another 30 minutes, turn the oven off, let it cool for another 30 minutes, run it up to 600 degrees. You're going to have to top off most of the ovens that you can get your hands on. But you get that up to 600 degrees, hold it for 20 minutes, that's it. Once that's cooled, you now have a silicon ceramic coating on that will withstand 2,000 degrees. And because it's a silicon ceramic coating, it's not going to react with any acid you put in there.
Cool.
Okay, hydrochloric acid, sulfuric acid, you want to drop some metal salts in there that are going to decompose and turn into sulfuric acid and metal, whatever. You can cook down whatever you want to make any compound you want to make that will fit within that confines of that 2,000 degree mark.
See, you know, this whole conversation right here, outside of the sheer brilliance of it, it came from not a mainstream science crew or research facility. Well, you know, there's a group out there.
That's just it. It did come from a research science
group. No, what I'm saying is the research that you've done, the knowledge that you got in your head, granted, it came from somewhere, just like all the rest of this stuff came from somewhere. But pretty much it's the average Joe that went out and did the research that now has the knowledge in your hand. And we have a lot of average Joes out there that have a lot of research behind under their belt. And so
the little metal pipe nipple autoclave, I give the original design credit to Robert Murray Smith, because that's where I saw that. The ceramic coating, I just did my own research because I realized I was going to have a caustic substance in there and added that to it and found something that actually worked. I got lucky and there was something there. It's made for exhaust spray. Maybe on engines and exhaust.
Have you ever heard of the Geek Group?
It's been a while since I've heard that name.
Well, cultists went out and actually got to visit with them. You know, they got a big old facility that they put together for experiments. We need a whole bunch of different situations like that where we got our own building and we could bring researchers from all over the world. And if I had it my way, I would build the building myself and I would pay for people to be able to fly in to this research facility. I'd pay for it out of my own pocket just to get these people together. Because there's a lot of things that I would love to accomplish, but I don't have all the talents that a lot of different people have out there. Like, you know, mechanically, I have no problems. But when it comes down to actually engineering and construction, you know, there's where I had the problems because, you know, it takes precision and math and everything out there in order to put these ideas that are in your brain into a physical object that doesn't wobble off into the floor, if you know what I mean. So I'd love to get all these people together in one place and we could just start building things. I don't even care what it is, just as long as it gets out there and can be used. What do you think?
Yeah, but she says you'd need 1.27 gigawatts to be out of power that place.
Well, I could get it, man, if I got money to manufacture me one of them lightning machines that we've been talking about. I could get this gigawatts.
Then you could go back in time.
Yeah.
In the DeLorean.
And believe me, B, brother, if I did have a doggone time machine like that, I'd go back in time and smack a few people.
Just out of interest, Thomas, I mean, you've got a ceramically coated surface of a steel tube, but what would you actually use it for?
Well, I've got a couple compounds that are kind of stepping off away from the direction of making graphitic carbon nitride. And, you know, the nitrogen in the graphitic carbon nitride, or the urea that it starts out as, is basically, you know, the basis of nitric acid.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a nitrogen compound that's used in the original synthetic oils that keeps the oil bonded to the metal walls of the inside of your engine. And if you let your engine set too long, the oil slides off, leaving the nitrogen behind, exposed, and then you get rust. So, you know, I don't want the inside of my steel pipes being all rusted and ruined by this process, because that means that I'm going to end up with steel and zinc and other galvanizing materials in my compound.
Yeah, but Thomas, what are you going to use it for?
That I can't talk about.
Yeah.
But that's as far as I can talk about it.
Sorry, I mean, yeah, it was a really, really good explanation.
Oh, I see. Steve's trying to do
surface on it.
Steve's trying to do a little industrial espionage on you there, Thomas.
No, I just wondered what it was for.
I can tell you can put it together, and you can take ferric chloride and urea and superheat that inside that container. You want to use a little gas pipe Teflon tape, not the water pipe Teflon tape, because that stuff's real thin and flimsy. You want the thick, heavy-duty Teflon tape, right? But then you can go ahead and cook some $1 a pound urea down and get, you know, about a third of that turns into graphitic carbon nitride. And if you dope it with the ferric chloride, which is basically iron 3 chloride, that's the stuff that they use for etching PCBs. If you go to like a Radio Shack and you buy a bottle of that nasty brown liquid for cutting through the copper on a sheet of PCB, copper clad board, that's the compound that you want. You add that to it, and that will dope it so that it actually has a better reaction if you're using it to make a hydrogen solar cell. That means basically you pour water over that, you set it out in the sun, and the sun activates the catalyst that you have made to release the hydrogen and oxygen that it has torn apart instantly on contact, repeatedly, releasing hydrogen and oxygen gas.
It's kind of interesting that you're talking about urea to nitrites, because that's one of the principles in aquaponics as well, is you take the urea that comes out of fish's gills, and natural bacteria in the atmosphere will eventually break it down to NO2 and then NO3 nitrogen, which is plant food.
Cool.
Well, there's sort of a crossover between the technologies that we're looking at the same compounds in radically different forms, but they're all for creating energy.
Right. Essentially, you're looking at it's doing the same processes, except that in this compound, the carbon is so firmly locked down on it that it can never form a proper ligand bond to the gases, so that it can become either ammonia, which is what it's trying to do with the hydrogen, or nitrous oxide, which is what it's trying to do with the oxygen. So the sunlight is more than enough energy to break that, to cleave that ligand bond, and then as soon as it's cleaved, more water fills the void, and that water doesn't have a strong enough bond between the hydrogen and oxygen to overcome the nitrogen's bond that it's going to attempt to make, and it breaks the more hydrogen and oxygen up. And they found that you can blow water vapor and carbon dioxide over this stuff too, and it'll make methanol.
Oh.
So, two completely non-combustible substances are now suddenly a combustible substance.
All right, well, methanol, that's a good deal right there. What the heck, man? We're talking about how we got this old doggone oil crisis, energy crisis around the world, and there are so many different materials out there that can burn, so many different natural ways that you can build fuel for the internal combustion engine and more. So why are we still even having an alternative energy deal, man? I mean, it's like this. If there's really a such thing as a global warming and then we're in for a serious catastrophe and all these science guys got it all figured out and the companies and the government's got it all figured out, why are we even still talking about it? We have the technology. What purpose does it solve taxing somebody for solar energy when, and on one hand,
you're stepping away from science there.
Well, that's
you got.
That's you there is science. Politics in science.
Yeah, you're half.
No, there is right, politics in science.
Something on science.
Shaziz, what you're getting into there is a different field of science called social engineering.
Oh, okay. So I didn't even think about social engineering being a science, but I guess you're right because they're really good at it.
The whole point of taxation, the whole point of us having these tedious, mindless jobs is basically to keep us occupied because we're capable of doing anything.
Well, maybe they don't want us to find out alternative energy because maybe in reality we're living in this giant spaceship that looks like Earth and everything's a hologram. And we could disrupt the systems if we're actually doing it. I'm just saying it because I'm crazy. You know, that's the way I am.
But do you get the point that, you know, recession must be good for us because it happens so often?
Well, yeah. I mean, if Pete and Repeat were on a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left?
Yeah,
George Bush.
Hey, you know, George Bush gets a bum rap because to this day, that old B.O. character still can't take credit for his own mess, you know? He's still, hey, Bush did it. Bush did it. If anything's wrong in the world, it's Bush's fault. I don't trust either one of them.
Would you trust the guy that couldn't find oil in Texas?
Would I trust a guy that couldn't find oil in Texas?
Yeah, George Bush.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of oil in Texas, that's for sure. So I'd kind of be concerned about it. And especially since you come from an oil family, all you can do is pay attention to what your pa said, and he'll tell you how to take your little divining rods out there and find your oil patch.
They've been doing that for so long. I have a feeling that these generations that are alive now didn't have very much to do with actually finding any oil. They just paid other people to do it.
Yeah.
You need to talk to Grandpa about that.
Yeah, let Grandpa find it. He's found the well. He found everything. But, look, I don't want to sound like a Pete and Repeat on the boat, but I get so doggone aggravated because I see where we could be right now and where we're at. And I got to sit around and I got to listen to all these different individuals out there. I scan around YouTube all the time and I look for all different types of energy research and even research of how to repurpose things. Like, you can turn a washing machine pump off the newer washing machines into a generator. You can take the direct drive motors or the smart drive motors out of back to washing machines, and it's already a built stator motor, and things like that, you know, ways that you can light up dead fluorescent bulbs. All of these things are good things that would be good for, you know, worst case scenario and you need some lighting or whatever. I just want somehow or another to put a boot in the rear end of the alternative energy community to speed up the brilliance that is already out there, instead of sitting around arguing with one another and these little troll tards that come out of high school and they think they know science, or they even go to college and come out and think they know science, and they're all sitting there telling you how stupid you are. But when in reality you go to their channel, they ain't got no videos, they haven't put no information out there, and they're not adding to the pot. They're just basically like that advertisement you see on TV, the rate suckers that are clinging to your car while you're trying to drive down the roof.
Which it is. Think of it this way. In the history of society, there's been control over resources. Back a long time ago, there was salt, there was water, there was, you know, camels. I mean, everywhere there's always ever been any sort of freedom for humanity, there's been somebody standing there trying to control it. And the most valuable resource that we have in the current day is knowledge.
Yeah. And right now, the key, the gate is wide open. I mean, you got the access to the internet. Now, people even talk about regulating that. For too long, you have to pay a toll fee just to get through to any information. Hey, well, if you want to know how to do a how-to, you know, what we've been doing with open source and information and stuff like that, I've benefited amazingly by other people's research, and I'm hoping that I've given some of that back to the community that other people have benefited from my research. You know, it's right now is it's a brilliant time in history. It's fascinating. Given as frustrating as it is that we ain't farther advanced than what we are, it's wonderful to see that people are stepping out of that box for a second and looking around and questioning things like, hey, how far away is the moon, you know? And they say this, but then I observe this. Now, what's what? That's what I like to hear. That's what the whole Shaziz Radio Mad Science is all about. Those folks who dare to question whether we did or didn't go to the moon, and the physics and the science of it, the battery technology, and, you know, there's battery technology that's been around for God knows how long that some of which I never even heard of. Have you ever heard of the Zamboni battery?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, it uses
we were talking about that the other week.
It uses manganese dioxide and aluminum layers, and basically you can create a high voltage battery out of just those two materials. Why couldn't that have been expanded on further than just the battery itself?
Think about all of the exploration of mineral resources, of alloys, of metals, of semi-precious and precious stones. All of this stuff has already been dug up quite a long time ago, and most of it's in junk piles. And if we can develop the knowledge and the how to use it, that's the scary part for the very small number of people that own a hell of a lot of stuff.
That's right, because everything comes from beneath our feet, from our mother. Yeah. We just got to put effort and condition ourselves to make wonderful things, just like a Harley Davidson. Comes from the earth.
Well, nature will show you how.
Keep your eye on what you're doing and make sure you're not doing something that's, you're basically, you got to be responsible. Don't be irresponsible with what you do.
Yeah, nature will show you how to work in harmony with nature if you pay attention. There's so many things. Like the bumblebee example, you know, look at the bumblebee. This little bumblebee shouldn't be able to fly. He's too fat. You know?
No, sorry, Shaziz. Bumblebees are a conspiracy theory. They can't fly because science says they can't.
Fly, so float, whatever.
It's just your imagination. Nose and stings you.
No, see, they're not bumblebees. They're little helium balloons with wings.
Well, let's look at the beetle, right? The beetle from the Egyptian period that they have pasted everywhere. Their shell is a complete dielectric, and then they have the wings that expand the effluvium in the wing. That's why they're flying into everything, because they can't control their effluvium.
Well, they're little armored vehicles, too, you know, so, hey, there's something to learn there.
Sadly, they like pulling up dung into little balls.
build you an exoskeleton like a doggone roly-poly, and if somebody tries to beat you up, just roll up in a ball. You know? It's just, that's what I'm saying, though. You know, nature shows you things. You know, water will always find its level. How can you use that, you know? You tilt water off its level, and then nature balances it back out. You capture the energy in between, and you use it. You haven't done anything. You haven't defied any laws of physics. You just let nature do a little bit of work for you. And nature is willing to work hand-in-hand with humanity. If you want to work in harmony with nature, you're all right. But if you want to get a step out of line, then nature will show you who's in charge. You know what I'm saying? This goes way above and beyond all of what we really think as reality. We can only see out in space so far. We can only see in the inner space so far. There's places on this earth that we can't get to because they're too deep, and our technology hasn't allowed us to go that far.
Well, in fairness to this, the deepest part of the ocean is Challenger Deep, and they got there in the 60s.
Yeah, I heard it was an exciting episode too, man.
But, I mean, we have actually been to the deepest part of the ocean, only once, but we've been there.
All right, well, at least somebody's giving it an attempt, man. That's all I'm saying. You know, I get frustrated because I see all this stuff on Star Trek, and I want it, man. I want a lightsaber. Do you want a lightsaber there, Thomas?
That's the wrong franchise. You might get sued over that.
Oh, that's Star Wars.
Let's keep our franchises separate there. You never know whenever the Star Wars and the Star Trek nerds will come out of the woodwork and gang up on us.
Yeah, that's it. The Trekkies
just alienated half of the nerds of the planet.
We alienated all of them.
All right, well, Star Trek, Star Wars, I love them all. I love them both. So I guess I'm a combination Trekkie. What's the other one for Star Wars?
I was going to say, what is that meme? It's a picture of Patrick Stewart that says, "Use the Force, Harry."
Either way, you know, I love science fiction because science fiction dares to question the norm. The only thing that I didn't like about science fiction, and could possibly be science fact if you actually went there, was there in the movie Interstellar, there was a planet that had water all over the entire planet. Well, this particular planet set so close to a black hole that it had a constant tidal wave that circled the planet. And like they were standing on this planet in about waist deep water, and they're looking at wreckage of a ship that went there before them. And somebody says, "Well, look at that island out there," and they're like, "That ain't no island, run!" You know, and it was a giant freaking tidal wave that comes around the planet every so often. Yeah. I don't want to go there. It'd be good for the surfer, I guess, but for, you know, habitation wise, unless you figure out a way to utilize that energy force to do something, I don't know, man. It's just a thought. Any of you guys want to land on that planet?
Well, in fairness, there are comparatives with that in England. You get a 20-mile wave that comes up on the River Severn every now and often, and it's big enough to surf on.
Well, have they harnessed it?
20 miles down the river. Well, this is the point. It's a tidal surge that, with the right equipment, you don't have to have it out in the middle of the river, but you can have it in a location where you can harness energy from it.
There's a gizmo out there that floats in the water, has a paddle hanging down in the water, and when the tide's going and out, it generates electricity. All right, that should be, there should be thousands of them all over the place. You know, we have wind turbines, we have solar panels, and they're always boo-hooing about how the wind turbines are whacking the birds. And okay, you put a doggone screen on your fan so your kid don't stick his finger in it. What's going to stop you from doing the same thing to the wind turbine to keep the bird from blapping into it?
I wouldn't be as worried about the people who are concerned about birds as I am the people who actually think those wind turbines that are out there generating electricity are actually responsible for hurricanes.
Wow. It's all those dang fans. If you turn those fans off, we wouldn't be getting all this whippy wind.
In fairness, Thomas, they did say if a butterfly beats its wings in Japan, there's a tsunami in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You're absorbing energy out of the atmosphere, so that means you're getting less wind. If anything, it's going to cause a stagnation if you put enough of them out. All but that's going to take an awful lot of them, man. We're never going to need that much power. We will run out of room. We'll be all shoulder to shoulder before we need that kind of power.
So we got thermal vents all over the planet, which we could produce steam for turbines. So if you strategically put your power plants near volcanoes, you know, worst case scenario, volcano goes off and destroys the power plant. So what, you know? Don't have it man, just have it automatic. When it has a problem, have somebody who's brave enough to go next to the volcano to fix it, and you're done deal. We have water or tides going in and out all the time. Put energy sources out there. Somewhere on this planet, there's static electricity going 24/7. Build a system to tap into that and use that as well. Build big, massive solar panels out in swampy areas where nobody wants to live because the alligators are like everywhere, and the snakes and the spiders the size of your face, you know, and take everything that we know and build a completely different power grid and stop boo-hooing about the doggone energy crisis, for Pete's sake. That's what I'm saying. If you can't find free energy, you're not looking hard enough for it. And these folks out here that want to keep their pockets full are doing the same exact thing they've been doing since way back in the 1800s. They're hiding the good information to the average Joe or buying up new innovations, ideas, or whatever, and shelving them for a later date. That whenever
if there's a patent that they purchased, that means there's an online record on how to do whatever it is that they bought the rights to. And there's nothing they can do to stop you from using it for personal use.
There you go.
Personal use. If you're not generating money off it, you're just basically getting back and forth to work or feeding yourself with it, maybe cooking some food, whatever, they can't do anything about it. And even if you do make a little money off it, there's no way they can chase everybody down that made an extra $100 this week off of their patent. It's not going to happen.
That's
they're
right.
Only after the big boys. They only want people like GE if they're using it without, you know, asking permission and getting and paying them for using it.
There's no use suing you if you only got $5 in your pocket. They want big money, so that's why they pay big lawyers.
That's my view on, you know, if I get a patent, is I'm going to put out a very detailed how-to so people can use it for personal use and do it on their own. They don't have to if they don't want to pay whatever company decides to pay me for the usage of that patent. Well, the only people that are going to get dinged financially for me patenting something are the lazy people who aren't willing to get out there and do it themselves and are not willing to work with some people to basically complete things that they can't do by themselves.
And for those folks out there who do want to make money on it, there's tons of people that aren't tool savvy, so to speak, or not mechanically inclined. You could build it for them, and the only service that you're selling is the service of your work to build it for them, your construction skills.
Somebody has to know about a transaction to do something about a transaction.
Yeah.
So if I patent something and you use it to do something to one of your neighbors, why would I even care?
Yeah.
You know, that would be like worrying about mosquitoes in Africa.
Well, if they were really worried about it, every time you bought a shovel and went out and used a shovel to earn a living, then they would charge you a fee for using that shovel. See, because that was my idea and you're making money off of it.
Well, you do have some companies that are pulling some shenanigans too. To try to lock down, like, you know, everybody knows what Microsoft is like. And they know full well that Microsoft has been trying to find a way to keep from selling their software. They want to lease it, so you have to keep paying for it. It's a constant money cow, right? Well, GM's trying to pull that nonsense now. They're trying to say, you don't really own that car.
Huh.
You bought and paid for it, but you never bought and paid for the rights to the software on it, and without the software, it won't run.
And
so we still own the car, ultimately.
that's not as crazy as it sounds, because, you know, there are, you got to really pay attention if you're ever buying property, because the previous owner can actually put a stipulation in there, and if you sign it, then it's basically there.
It's legally binding.
You have they retain any mineral rights. So you buy this land at a reasonable price, and then at some point in time you find rare minerals or oil or gold or something like that on there. They own it, you know, and you said okay. That's why if you're going to buy a piece of property somewhere, you make doggone good and sure you read the fine print under subsection A, article B in the fine print. You know what I'm saying?
There was discussion about that in Ireland as well, because I was told by the local council that I don't own anything 1 meter below my land. And I said, well, who does?
Yeah. Who owns that?
If it doesn't belong to me.
And
that's why they were claiming that you need permission to drill a well.
What's to stop me from digging a hole clear to the doggone Earth's core and using that for energy if I want? It's under my house.
Well, you don't own it.
Doggone.
That would be theft. Now, I said, but don't you hold everything in trust for the population of the country? For the citizens, the people that were naturally born here or have taken citizenship?
All right, so listen to this. If you took like, say I got my house, right, and Thomas lives next to me and you live a little farther down and Justin lives a little bit farther down. You guys buy your property. If I dig down in my basement all the way and undermine all y'all's property and build me a sub basement with a long tunnel network down there, is that okay?
Or if you're in Kuwait and you dig diagonally at a 45-degree angle into Iraq. Well, we won't talk about that, will we?
Well, as long as I don't come up on the surface, I guess I'd be all right. And as long as your sewage pipe doesn't erupt and start pumping down into my sub basement, then...
Well, I mean, just using this fertilizer.
One of the things I wanted to point out about intellectual patents as well are companies like Monsanto that are trying to claim that they own nature. And that's quite scary. And people who are not aware of this yet really should look up this topic, where they're deliberately and intentionally creating plants that won't produce seed.
And to me, that is nuts. The Monsanto deal, where you got a gene that's in your seed, and you got a patent on it. That's crazy, man. You know, I didn't know this until I talked to my father-in-law, who is a farmer, and he said that back in the old days, he used to save the seeds up, and he would save them back for use for later, or he could sell them off to different farmers to supplement his income. And they actually came out with a regulation that said you couldn't do that because it's not fair on the marketplace. Well, it's his seed, you know, and it's all
what
natural.
What about the people that produce the food? Why would they need to go to a third party to be able to keep producing food that we need to eat? On top of that, there's kind of some very dubious mechanisms and methods in the genetic structure of some of these plants as well that are not necessarily conducive with good human health.
Like the modification of the genes in some of those plants so that they're actually producing their own pesticide. So whenever you get that seed and whatnot from the from the baker after they turn it into bread or whatever, it's still got that pesticide baked right into it.
Well,
it's a fundamental genetic structure.
Hey, Thomas!
What they've done, Chizzy, is they've modified the genetic structure of plants to use what they call a BT-style pesticide, which has been used by organic gardeners for a very long time, because it's not necessarily harmful to humans when it's topically applicated and fed in the water to the roots of the plant. And it does stop diseases and lots of bugs and things like that.
Right, it's not getting locked into the cell, though, like the way they're doing
yeah.
now.
What they're doing now is they're locking it into the cell, and the internal flora in our stomachs is being killed off by eating this food. So we've no enzymes to digest food with.
Well, speaking of pesticides, I got a question for you guys. Do you see any reason why ants would not like neodymium magnets?
Yeah, because they use a mechanism of electrical signals as well as pheromones to follow each other around.
Well, here recently, for some reason, the ants figure that my casa is su casa, and so they've been kind of joining in on the festivities, so to speak. They've been crawling around, and so
that's a lot of free formic acid there, man.
Yeah, I've been doing an experiment for the last few days. I've got 10 3/4-inch neospheres, and I got them sitting next to my coffee cup, which they for some reason like to raid. And so far, you know, whether it be coincidence, I'm going to have to do it longer in order to be able to figure out whether or not it's really seriously working. But so far, the ants won't come anywhere near them magnets. And so that's why they can't get to my coffee mug.
It could be the boron, because there's boron in neodymium magnets. And boric acid kills ants.
Well, either way, I got an inanimate, non-toxic, as far as we know, set of magnets sitting down there, and it's not I'm not seeing any ants working their way here.
Well, it's just this. Think of it this way: you've just built a better mousetrap.
Cool.
If you've got an area in
say, patented.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got a small area where plant bugs and ants and all sorts of vermin, termites are all getting in through a small crack in the wall, you just stick a magnet in front of it.
Well, see, that's what I'm going to keep on doing, is to see that it really works. And I'll actually know where a couple little ant hills. I'll go out there and stick it over the hole and see how long it takes them to come out.
Yeah, watch out for Greenpeace, though.
Yeah. Well, if it's not harming the environment, and it's non-toxic to humans, and I guess unless you swallow a 3/4-inch neodymium sphere, then you ain't got no problems. But either way, it seems to work. I've been doing this for the last 2 or 3 days, and I haven't had any ants coming anywhere near it. So it's just an idea that I came up with, because, you know, ants got the little antenna, and they navigate the same way a lot of animals and insects do. So I figured, well, you know, if you got this strong magnetic field in a nearby, then they shouldn't, they shouldn't want to come near it. They'd probably get a headache or something.
There's theories that a queen ant can send electrical signals, pulses, to any of the worker ants that are in the nearby vicinity. And what usually happens is when the queen dies, so do all of the drones.
Well, then I'd go stick a big old giant neodymium magnet on the queen.
Well, if it disrupts the communication...
Well, look at their shell. What is their shell? It's a very, very, very strong, thick dielectric. So if they have an accumulative charge, that means they're a bubble. And if they're a bubble and they start oscillating, per se, then another bubble will be conflicted, no different than the coil in your speaker. It's got a bubble, and the magnet in your speaker's got a bubble. They're both constants, and then when you make a little switch in that coil, it turns it off and on. It sends a frequency and bouncing back and forth.
So would it be plausible that if there was any kind of, you know, if he was doing some gardening, per se, and this actually worked, that you could actually put some magnets around your garden and not have to use pesticides?
Yeah, if you take a piece of plastic and you take silk and you rub the plastic or the pipe or whatever you're using, like amber, right, you could actually pick the ants right off the ground with an accumulative charge.
Cool. An ant sucker. We can call it the aardvark and patent it.
but that shows that they are charged, if you can do that.
Well, I'm interested in all ideas, and so I just thought I'd throw that out there, because so far that little experiment seems to be working right. And any knowledge is better than no knowledge, as far as I'm concerned.
Video where it didn't happen, and put it on YouTube. Monetize it.
Hey,
make a few bucks to get some of that engineering you need done for some of those ideas you got.
That's a good plan. I could actually do that, because I could get I could literally go out and shovel up an entire ant colony and put it inside a doggone couple fish tanks. Put one of the no magnets.
Be a lot more humane than that guy that took liquid molten aluminum and poured it down into an ant hive.
And dang. And actually videotape the response. That's a good idea there, Thomas. I think I'll do that.
That is the difference between making a mess and destroying things in science.
Yeah.
Keeping detailed records of the destruction.
So if the ants won't come to one side of the deal, but they'll stay on the other side, and you can put food on both sides to see whether or not they'll travel from one side to the other, that should be pretty much show that whether or not you could use that as a natural pesticide, so to speak.
Well, you can get a ring magnet pretty easily, too. I'm sure you have one somewhere around there.
Oh, I got tons of them.
Put the stuff in the middle. Just dump it in the middle there and see how they like that.
Yeah.
See if they're willing to crawl through that to get to, say, some sugar that's in there or some honey.
That's brilliant. I'm going to do
it. They're not. There's your proof.
There you go. And that
and
would
easy,
save a
easy
lot.
Easy to replicate. Very easy to replicate to make sure that, you know, if they want to test it out, somebody else wants to test it out for themselves and see if it's legitimate or not.
Well, instead of people spraying poison around their house to keep doggone ants at bay, then they could use something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a one-time until the magnet wears out kind of deal.
If you go digging around, you'll find that there's a whole array of pesticides that you can use that normally you end up eating.
Ew.
Yeah. Think of this, okay?
No, pesticide and eating in the same sense don't sound.
No. Right, that's because you're used to Monsanto pesticides. You're used to that caliber of pesticides. Do you eat jalapenos?
Very rarely, because they always get me in the end.
Oh, do you have an arrow? Do you think of those the same way you do pesticides?
Uh-uh.
Okay, well, jalapeno juice is a good deterrent to keep cockroaches, ants, ticks, fleas, all kinds of stuff like that out of your house. Just spray it around your house on the outside.
Huh.
Let it dry.
That sounds interesting. I wonder if I took a bath in jalapeno juice and then ran it through the woods, if I'd get any fleas or ticks on me. That'd be a good YouTube video.
I think you'd be worried about the fleas or ticks by that point. You'd probably be in the hospital for those caustic burns.
All right.
Well, interesting you said that, Thomas, because one of the herbal remedies in the swamps, marshes down in Kent, is to rub wild garlic. Crush a wild garlic in your hands and rub it on your skin, and the mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, all this sort of stuff won't bite you.
Yep, they don't like parasites. That's where the whole wives' tale about garlic keeping vampires away came from. Bloodsuckers.
Well, you know what? I just think that just this conversation alone, I mean, I wish that we had hours and hours to just sit around and talk about this stuff and build it, and I wish we could get people together. You know, I keep coming back to your networking idea, Thomas. That is the key right there, getting people networked together. I mean, we already do it on Skype. There's a start. We do it on Shaziz Radio website and Awake Radio website and People to People and all the different KCT and 1800 online, all these different networks out there are networking with people. And somehow or another, we just need to keep the ball rolling. And
right. Well, Revolution Green, there's even like an entire Wikipedia that's being compiled, so maybe we can push to have, simple, cheap methods of making technology available to scientists who are trying to do work in their garage without breaking the bank.
Well, you know, they'll
and
give...
We can add that pesticide thing right to it, including the one with the magnets.
The doggone governments of the world will give money to research scientists for the mating habits of slugs and sloths and so on and so forth.
And detangling fishing line, don't forget that.
Yeah, but will they
give... $150,000.
Man!
Yeah.
But will they give the average Joe, who is trying to solve the so-called energy crisis that, in my mind, they
actually
don't care about, man?
If you fill out the right paperwork, they've got money they got to give away.
All right,
you just
somebody
have to know what to sign for and what to fill out, you know.
Somebody fill me out that paperwork and get me a grant, and I guarantee I get you a doggone free energy device. I guarantee it.
Find somebody willing to fill that paperwork out. They're probably filling it out for themselves.
Yeah, that's
But, I mean, there's instructions online on how to do that. I mean, just go dig around. There's used to be a book you could get from Pueblo, Colorado that told you all about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, my...
If you want to search for that, you could probably find an online version.
My mind and paperwork don't seem to want to get along. I probably get myself a brain tumor and a crooked eye syndrome trying to figure it all out, you know.
It'll straighten out. I found the eye straightens out. Don't worry about the eye.
I was talking to a friend of mine that had claimed a few grants for scientific research. And he said the best way you can get the approval for the grant is to make sure you do something that's inefficient.
Oh. Hey, there you go. There you go. Under the guise of my most hated subject, the global warming subject, I'll save the planet. Just give me some doggone money. What do you think? I'll solve it all.
They're going to ask you how you're going to do it, so you got to come up with something really ineffective.
Yeah, I would like, I've got this doggone...
I'm going to hold my breath.
I got this electronic leaf mulcher that shoots stuff into the bag, and what I plan to do is stand outside all day long and see how long it takes me to suck all the doggone CO2 out of the air into a trash bag. What do you think?
Say you're going to do a study on how people holding their breath for 10 seconds a day will affect the CO2 levels in the atmosphere.
Yeah, if everybody holds their breath for 10 minutes a day, we got it made.
You only need to do that one day.
Yeah, one day, we got it made.
I was thinking of Monty Python's luxury chocolates, things like the Crunchy Frog Surprise, but, you know, we could develop something that could assess the body mass index of people that eat it, like a chocolate, and if they're over a certain body mass index, then their head explodes and they're no longer a burden to population.
Well, how about...
You can just cut down on the population by doing research on that world's most dangerous joke.
How about
a research on the placebo effect of the dumbing down of the population of the world?
You're getting too serious for them now.
Well, you know, if you tell somebody the world's coming to an end, it has to have some sort of adverse effect to them, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, in fairness, they're talking about population explosion, but I threw a load of articles from mainstream news. From Asia, from Europe, from America, where most developed populations are actually in serious decline.
Well, the only population the explosion that I'm worried about is this ant problem that we've here recently acquired.
Yeah, I mean...
These guys breed like rabbits or something.
No, they breed like ants.
It's like, you know, you take a few of them out and more keep coming. I don't know where they're coming from.
Breed like ants.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not worried about the planet being overpopulated. I think we could probably withstand 10 times the population because there's so many places been locked down by governments, and some places that are just no man's land where nobody wants to live. And so
Yeah, they keep banging the drum about overpopulation, but when you actually look at the government's own statistics, Japan is in a population crisis. South Korea is in a population crisis. Singapore is. England is. America is. I mean, these populations are not expanding. They're actually reducing.
Well,
the problem is you do not have hip population to be able to manage your factories, to be able to drive your buses, drive your trains. And we're going to get to a situation where there just ain't going to be enough people around.
Yeah, who's going to work at McDonald's or be a guest on Dancing with the Stars, man? If you got a bunch of old fuddy-duddies that are croaking off anyway, I mean, who wants to sit around and watch a bunch of old folks like me complain?
But, I mean, you were talking about the dumbing down. I mean, if you have a population that doesn't really have a high level of education, then they're going to kind of do what they need to do to get their TVs, to get their cars, to get all of the sort of iPads and iPhones and all the rest of this junk that people want to sell and make a massive profit from. But, you know, where is the value in that? It keeps society in a sort of recessive area.
Well, I put a rude and hateful comment out, believe it or not, yesterday, which pretty much said that Al Gore was a, you know, no good for nothing, hypocrite slash fraud, and there weren't no real environmentalists out there in this world, because if you're an environmentalist and you're still living in a house that's not a mud hut, then you're basically endangering the environment. If you get in a VW van with peace signs all over it and drive to the protest zone, then you're not helping the environment. If you take your build your signs out of paper that you're using to protest with, then you need to be saving the trees. And so with that said, whether you're using a cell phone or whether you use a computer or turning every light on in the house, you're not a true environmentalist. You know, if you're living out there in a mud hut on the land and eating berries and tree bark and rubbing aloe vera on your sunburn, then you are a true environmentalist. Otherwise, who are you to tell me to reduce my carbon footprint if you're stepping on a corporate jet up in there in the first class section and, you know, eating caviar and all that kind of stuff, man? You just wiped out a whole fish population there.
Well, I mean, you have to practice what you preach, Liz. If you claim about rising sea levels, you don't go and buy four coastline properties, do you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, sure. Instead of driving to the conference in a limousine, get in a rickshaw and have one of your buddy environmentalists pull you. Look, don't get me wrong. I love the planet, and I think we need to work in harmony with nature. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is if... here we are, we're talking about alternative energy and alternative fuel sources, which are out there and have been out there forever and a day, but yet instead of jumping on the bandwagon and solving the so-called issue, you go out there and hold up a sign and say, save the trees, you know? Hey, what'd you do, man? You got a sign and you're holding a sign.
Actually, I think the funniest one I've seen was save the planet, kill yourself.
Yeah, but if you're holding a sign that has a wooden stick and a paper freaking cardboard or whatever up there and you're saying save the trees, you see what I'm saying?
Well, unless it's made out of hemp paper.
Well, okay. I guess that'd be all right.
Just like that VW you were talking about, it might be a VW that's been converted to run off of... vegetable oil, so it smells like French fried chicken going down the road. Yeah.
You have the toast police in England, Thomas. Mm-hmm. When people first started using biofuels in the 90s, where they were going to fast food places and getting their old oil, I mean, they used to call them the toast police, especially trained sniffer dogs, because the smell of biofuels coming out of the back of a taxi smelled like burnt toast.
But once again, if you're going to take the time and the money to buy a dog and train this dog to sniff for French fries smelling exhaust fumes and then turn around and tell me I got to reduce my carbon footprint and pay you carbon taxes,
that's what the dog is for, is to get more tax money and arrest somebody for not paying their fuel taxes because they're making their own fuel, but you still have to pay tax on it.
Something in that whole deal stinks, man.
Yeah, they're not okay with you doing anything unless their hand can be in your pocket.
Yeah.
That's the whole point there. I mean, you would think that recycling would be the prime interest of the environmentalists. Because what's already been used is then reused for another purpose, i.e. transportation and distribution. So why do they have a big issue with it? Well, because you're not paying your dues. I mean, you exist, therefore you have to pay somebody.
Yeah, there you go, man. The IRS.
Because the planet belongs to somebody else.
Yeah.
It belongs to this little group of people that write the zeros. They decide how much money is available for people to own. And you and I and everybody else we know are just squatters. Dirty little squatters Darn those people.
They forgot
the most important part about humanity, and that is somewhere in our history, we are all related.
Would
we're all family.
I believe
the term that they use is useless feeders.
Mm-hmm.
Would the owners of the major food chains out there eat their own product? That's what I want to know. I want to go find the owners of all the different major food chains out there and take them some of their own product for dinner and have a sit down with them. Here's your share from your company, brother, and see the look on their face. Would they eat their own product? Would Monsanto eat their own vegetables, or do they have these? Or do they go around and find guys and gals like us who are into alternative gardening and stuff, where we have no pesticide-free and non-genetically modified food sources? Do they buy from us and then turn around and sell the rest of the world the crud? What do you guys say?
Well, I mean, the royal family in England are well known to grow organic food, but what's not so well known is wherever the Queen goes, her own produce goes with her.
So she won't eat from the same grocery store that you got.
Well, she certainly won't be going down to Iceland for a bit of a sausage.
And like Thomas said, come follow everybody back into history. We're all related, and so with that said, unless these guys are truly lizards from outer space, then that's the case, and they're just as scummy as we are, you know, according to their own plan.
Well, in fairness, Prince Harry, one of the royal princes, did have a burger in a Queen Victoria burger at an Aussie fast food place.
But was it made with good? Did they have a science guy come in here and say, "Research how this guy does this stuff before I put it in my mouth"?
Well, it's good enough for us, mate. I mean, how many of the directors, VPs, senior management of these fast food companies are vegan?
I don't know, but what I'm hearing both you and Thomas say essentially is that they wouldn't eat the same food that they swap the hogs with.
No. I mean,
he's talking about somebody that's not selling food, though. When you talk about the Queen, I'm pretty sure they don't own a McDonald's.
No, but
they probably own shares in it.
Why? What's her purpose for not eating at the same plate that we're eating at, you know? Is she a germaphobe? Because she's not an idiot.
there's lots of people that treat things that way, though, that won't eat, you know, just whatever everybody else happens to be eating. They grow their own stuff specifically so they won't have to go to Walmart and buy some genetically modified slop.
Either way, I put a skeptical eye on it whenever I see that somebody doesn't practice what they preach. That's where that whole episode came from. If you're not going to eat it, why should I trust it? I should eat it, you know?
Let's bring a little bit of critical thinking into food, Chizzy. The whole concept of our stomachs is to take organic matter and degrade it down into the components that our body needs to feed it. But it needs organic matter. A lot of the fast food has no organic matter in it. That's why they can keep it on the shelf for 12 months, because it doesn't biodegrade.
Well, that's probably also why everybody looks like they're so run down. They're mineral deficient, and they're tired all the time. They look sickly. So go to
they're eating too many sponges and ground up worms.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that's probably the nicest part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at food, the amount of additives.
There's good calcium in there. Where's it come from? Well, we grind up the beaks and the claws.
Yeah. Which in itself is not such a bad thing if it's nutrients our bodies need.
Well,
it's not done for that. It's done for cost effectiveness.
I think I'd rather eat nematodes and some of that stuff.
But I mean, if you walk into a supermarket and you look on the labels of food, it's an elaborate chemistry set.
Yeah, if you want to build an improvised device, go to the grocery store. There's plenty of chemistry in your Twinkies and your Fruit Loops. You know, hey.
You're talking about an interesting thing that I've been doing lately, which is to look for purified chemicals when I'm at Walmart and places like that.
Cool, like you're talking about the powdered donuts?
Oh, like, no, like sodium bicarbonate. Borax. Borax for 12 and 20 mule is basically boron and sulfur. It's a boron sulfate. That's all it is. Just boron sulfate. I mean, there's a lot of compounds and chemicals that we use, like, just for cleaning around the house and whatnot, that you would be surprised, or for cooking even, that's, you know, it's ready for a home, you know, lab to do some testing and experimenting with.
Cool.
So, same thing with, you know, running to the feed store and looking at all the fertilizer and stuff like that. I mean, sulfuric acid from drain cleaner and monocalcium phosphate, which is basically called triple strength phosphorus fertilizer, and you can make pure phosphoric acid. You don't have to go buy it anywhere. So,
well, and in the beverage section, you can get carbonated water that works really good in your solar cells, or not your solar cells, but your hydrogen cells.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-da! What do you say we take a quick music break?
Let's do it.
All right, everybody, you're listening to Shaziz Mad Science. Stay tuned. It'll probably get a little bit madder before it's all said and done. All right.
Through his day. Trouble all my day. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. For 6 long years I've no pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Perhaps I'll die upon this train. Perhaps he'll die upon this train. You can bury me in Sunny Valley for many years who I may lay. Sleeping in my grave, while he is sleeping in his grave. Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger, my face you never will see no on God's golden shore. He'll meet you on God's golden shore. There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware.
I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. Thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Give me the number for 911.
All right, everybody, we're back. You're listening to Shazia's Mad Science. The last few minutes of the show, we've had a brilliant conversation about all kinds of stuff out there. I hope you didn't miss it. If you did, then you'll catch the podcast, I hope. But, you know, either way, we asked the question to dare to think outside the box, and so I posted a video in the chat rooms over there at Shaziz Radio and AwakeRadio.com that basically asked the question, how far away is the moon? And, you know, if you go ask the wrong person how far away is the moon, you're liable to get all kinds of bleepity bleep bleep and so forth. Coming to you because a lot of folks don't want to question the norm, but we don't do that here, do we, guys?
Well, Shazis, I can tell you exactly where the moon is. It's about 3 inches above the top of the mosque across the road.
That's a crescent moon, though. That's not even the whole moon, man.
No, that's the actual moon.
Oh, that. Oh, okay.
I can see it. It's just above the top of the mosque.
Can you get your telescope in on it and snap a picture?
Yeah, I can do that for you.
And Thomas could build one of them lasers that could tell us how far away it is. Or you can take the tape measure.
If I'm going to do that, I'm going to build myself a laser so I can etch my face onto it.
Hey, then there would be a man on the moon. I got it. Man, see, you know, we're speaking scientific blasphemy, man. Doggone it. How far away is the moon? All right, well, anyway, you know, the whole...
Is this?
Yeah.
Just a quick final talk. You can always tell how deep water is. And it's usually about 2 inches deep. And you know why?
Why?
Only comes halfway up a duck's backside.
Oh, well, you know, if you could, like, if you could take and put a float in the water with a long tape measure, and you got your snorkel on and your scuba mask, you could literally jump in the water and ride the tape measure down, and when you get standing on the bottom, drag it to the ground and see how deep it is. What do you think?
I say you throw the politicians in there, and the ones that float, we need to burn them. Burn them all.
Because they're witches.
I'm not so sure they would float.
Hey. Well, I don't know. I mean, a lot of politicians don't like to sunbathe on the beach.
Cause hey, come on, man. Anything full of hot air will float.
Well, you got a point. But, you know, hey, wouldn't that be cool if all of a sudden the politicians got so much hot air in their head they just begin to float up in the air and stuff? We could say, bye, have a nice trip.
I'm not saying I'm not saying the politicians are well fed, but every time they do sunbathe on a beach, Greenpeace pitch up in a Zodiac and try and lash a bit of rope around their ankles and try and drag them out to the rest of the pub.
That's not nice.
that's why you weren't laughing so much there.
From solicitors for defamation.
All right, how many politicians got rescued back to the ocean? That's the question. All right, well, that's one of the scientific wonders of the world now. Anyway, folks, you know, all I'm saying, and all these guys have been saying, is you got access to a massive resource out there of information, or as Steve would say once in a while, the sum of all man's knowledge is out there at our fingertips, and if you use it for the proper reason, then it's going to be a good deal. And, you know, as far as the alternative science community and the mainstream science community, there's a lot of brilliant minds on both sides of the fence. But we should be so much further advanced than what we are today. And for whatever reason, I dare to ask the question, why are we not further advanced than what we are? And why can't we get everybody to come to the table? If there is a so-called energy crisis, why can't we solve it? I mean, we've got everything we've got. We've got everything we need to do so. And there's guys out there that are brilliant, that have done tons and tons of research, that has been researched from people who had done tons and tons of research in the past. So there are alternative methods to everything from cooking to gardening to electricity and everything that you can imagine. And if we can learn how to work in harmony with nature, then we can keep the so-called environmentalists happy, and we can keep the world happy, and everybody could breathe easy. If the government,
everybody could have a Coke and a smile.
Yeah. If the government really cared about what they're talking about and what they're taxing you for, don't you think we would have got it solved by now? Eh?
Well, actually, it's been proven just from observation that anything the government attempts to do, they fail at. You know why they fail at it?
Well,
because they're using violence to do so, and violence always fails and creates the opposite effect.
I believe it.
War on drugs? Drugs got worse. War on poverty? Poverty got worse.
Yeah.
So they need to have a war on jobs and you know, funds.
Well,
I have a feeling then, you know, everybody will have a lot more jobs and a lot more money if they have a war against it.
Speaking of jobs, if you solve the world's problems and the politicians and the government don't have job security. So I think about it that way. So anyway, we're down to the wire. You guys, anybody got anything last quick ideas that you want to throw out there on the table or your YouTube or something like that? Who wants to go first?
Does the war on terrorism really require you to be groped by somebody on minimum wage to keep the country safe?
Well, I'm terrorized by the by just the mere thought of somebody groping me that ain't my woman, man.
Well, this is a government policy, isn't it?
Yeah, they the gropage. And then you have episodes where they say they're picking out all the cute girls to grope in line or the cute guys to grope in line. And you know, it's like become a free-for-all. Nasty.
So when you have people visiting your country and people returning to their home, is it a good idea to humiliate and distress them to keep the peace in society?
Yeah. And let the guy with the AK-47 and the towel on his head come on through. He's cool.
Well, he's in the baggage handling so he doesn't get checked.
You don't want to offend him, man. And it says Howard Johnson on the towel, so there's a good chance he might not own that towel. So I'm just saying.
That's my final thought, anyway.
All right. That's a good one, man. What about you, Thomas?
You've already said what I had to say, so...
Cool.
networking. Work together, you know. Many hands make light of a heavy load.
All right, well, you guys heard it from the crew of the Mad Science guys. You need to join in, and if you got an opportunity to join us tomorrow for the Knights of the Round Table, this is your platform. If you're sick and tired of the system and you don't want to go along just to get along and you feel like you have this urge to defy the laws of physics and go into some science fiction so we can turn into science fact just like it's been done, let's do it. This is the place for it. So with that said, thanks for listening. Peace and love, everybody. Pass the podcast around to your friends. Take care.
Operator, give me the number for 911.